When it comes to the environment or eating sugar or driving cars, why do people fail to do the right thing? Simple, according to our guest this time, because massively well-funded corporate marketing and PR efforts systematically distract us from the right things to do. Grant Ennis is an academic who takes on the big corporations and their marketing budgets in his book Dark PR: How Corporate Disinformation Harms Our Health and the Environment. In it, he calls out the spin behind the global problems that we face, not least global warming. He was in Dublin recently to talk about his research at TCD, and from there Culturefile's Louise Williams led him through the streets of Dublin to assess how the city is tackling the dominance of cars.
So this is College Green. Friday afternoon, getting up close to rush hour, loads of trams, suitcases, cyclists, scooters, taxis galore.
Yeah, I mean, the trams, the buses, everything seems to be coming in conflict with one another here. To be honest with you, when I'm looking at this space, I'm imagining it completely pedestrianized. And it seems like the kind of place that you'd have a big plaza with, like, small restaurants and shops. I'm surprised that it isn't.
Right. The illustrations are there. The plans are there. They just haven't been put into action yet.
Yeah, and you might hear the critique that you don't need to pedestrianize it because it's all working. It's flowing. But we're disincentivizing people from using this space. You know, you're making it uncomfortable. That bus just honked at somebody just trying to walk across the street. And it's a stressful interaction. It's not making this place a place where you really want to be or be with other humans and hang out.
How did you feel? We came out of front gate and I kind of guided you across to this little island section in the middle of College Green. How are you feeling here? What's your kind of sense?
Well, I think you just said it. You had to guide me.
I did.
I'm not sufficiently capable as a foreigner to get here by myself.
So we're facing Trinity. I'm going to turn you around and guide you to our next destination. So that's South William Street, and I'm going to ask for you to have a read of South William Street. We're going to stroll along it, okay?
Great.
So this is South William Street, William Street South. It's a narrow road. It lends itself well to strolling up and down. There are great shops. There's loads of cafes. We're just outside a nice cafe. Full of promise, right? Mmm.
It looks great.
Yeah, it looks nice, right?
It looks really good.
Yeah.
Is this a car park?
Ah. So, that was a very short-lived pedestrian street.
That was it. Wow. It's very short.
What I find baffling about it is that this looks pedestrianized. When there's not a car in it, it still looks like a pedestrianized street.
It's the worst of both worlds.
Right?
In some ways. I often talk about now the need to prioritize accessibility rather than mobility. And this is definitely a place where they're trying to do both. And it's not really working very well. And it's probably why you have these empty buildings. If you made it so that you had a bakery there, you had a coffee shop there, which would be great for safety, it would be great for the environment, for air pollution, for building a sense of community.
So everybody's strolling, right? Looking around. There aren't that many cars from the car park.
Yeah,
but the minute the car's not there, people stroll as if it is pedestrianized. That's why I find it kind of a head wrecker of a street.
Yeah, and as soon as our motorist overlords arrive, all of the people on the street right here are going to have to clear the way.
Yeah.
Like as if the king were coming through.
Yeah.
Well, I think part of it is it's very difficult to imagine a future state other than the status quo. Mm. But specifically for cars, the researcher named Ian Walker has this term that he came up with called motonormativity, which is essentially that in all areas of our lives, we've normalized the automobile.
You also talk a lot about this idea of sort of responsibility being put on individuals when things go wrong.
Yeah, so we know that these kinds of interventions that focus on the individual don't lead to behavior change. I'll speak about global warming first, actually, because it's so striking. A lot of people like to work on their carbon footprint, and I don't think people are aware of where this concept of the carbon footprint came from. But it was actually something that was popularized by British Petroleum in about 2004. And now we're all very concerned about our carbon footprint. We're concerned about Taylor Swift's carbon footprint. All the while, we've been distracted by our carbon footprint our governments have been increasing fossil fuel subsidies. So, for example, the International Monetary Fund calculated that in the year 2000, Ireland was subsidizing fossil fuels through mainly through tax subsidies to the tune of 1.5 billion euros per year. In the year 2024, the IMF is estimating that it's about 3 billion. It's quite shocking when you think about it in the context of how many times you have recycled a can, you have walked to work to do something better for the environment, you remember to turn out the lights at night. All the while we've been like focusing on all these individual actions, which collectively haven't resulted in any society-wide changes to our energy usage or carbon emissions. Our governments around the world have been increasing subsidies to fossil fuels. In total, globally, we are now spending $7 trillion U.S. dollars per year on fossil fuel subsidies.
Why are you interested in this area, and what motivates you?
Well, I guess one way of answering your question is to admit my guilt. I was a hardcore recycler. I was very concerned about reducing my carbon footprint. And the more I realized that our governments needed to take action and weren't, I realized that our carbon footprints and our individual actions were not only distracting me from taking more political action, but they were distracting everybody else around me, because they were all spending so much time reducing their carbon footprints that they didn't have time to join me at a protest or join me in engaging politically. I realized then, when I wanted to kind of like start shouting at the top of my lungs, we need to stop focusing on the individual, I needed to first start by explaining the other ways that corporations manipulate us first, on the way that tax subsidies work for propaganda, basically. So public relations, advertising, marketing, all of these forms that are used by large corporations to spend millions and millions of euros per year manipulating us, essentially, all of those are tax deductible. So we would call these subsidies. I know the term is not always widely used that way, but at least in economics and in sociology, we use this term subsidies to refer to any kind of economic incentive. And so marketing and propaganda and dark PR and disinformation and advertising and public relations, all of these things are a tax write-off for these corporations. So we're essentially taking money out of our pockets, giving it to our governments. Those governments are giving it to these corporations, effectively. And those corporations are then using that money to manipulate us.
Grant Ennis on the streets with Louise Williams there. Dark PR, How Corporate Disinformation Harms Our Health and the Environment, is out now.